This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Governor Eric Holcomb is scheduled to address the state at 1:30 this afternoon to talk about equity and inclusion. To help catch us up and find out what we can expect, we're joined by Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Brandon, thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
So the state says Governor Holcomb will address the state on equity and inclusion, which is pretty vague. Do we know any specifics about what the governor is going to talk about?
We don't know specifics at this point. We'll find those out when he makes his speech. But we certainly can infer that this will be about things like justice reform and racial injustice that have been bubbling up really in the forefront of the discussion publicly for the last few months, and have existed in society for a heck of a lot longer than that.
This came on pretty suddenly. We found out about this the middle of yesterday afternoon. We had already had something else planned for today. Any reason for this sort of sudden announcement and decision that you know of?
Not that I know of. I'll say this. Governor Holcomb promised a sort of to-do list on racial justice and equity inclusion, if you want to use the phrasing of the governor's press release here. He promised a to-do list a few months ago, back in the beginning of June. We haven't really heard much since then, other than him promising, it's coming. So obviously, if this is what that is, and it's ready, it's overdue. So in that sense, I'm not surprised that it's happening now, only that it should have happened probably before that. The suddenness of it is, I wouldn't read too much into that. He announced a press conference a day before it happened.
The nationwide protests against police brutality and systemic racism, which started after, of course, the police killing of George Floyd, that it began in late May. Gosh, nearly 3 months ago. So do we know why it's taken him so long to talk about the state's response?
We really don't. So he had a press conference right at the beginning of June. I want to say it was like June 1st, actually, after some protests in Indianapolis, as we saw all around the country. He made a speech at the State House and took questions about it. And he was asked about what is his response to what the protesters and activists are asking for. And again, he promised this to-do list without really any more specifics. But he was asked, what have we done up till now? And he pointed at, again, without a lot of specifics, he pointed at, all of the job training opportunities that the state has done. And he talked about how Indiana needs to do, Indiana being the government, how Indiana state government needs to do a better job of letting people know what opportunities already exist. It'll be interesting to see in this press conference, in this announcement from the governor, how much of it is brand new things that the state will do versus telling people about the things it's already done or are already doing. As for why it took nearly 2.5 months, I certainly can't say that, but I know that people have been frustrated at how long it's taken.
Are there any specific changes being pushed for by activists and lobbying groups that the administration could work to enact?
Oh, there's a lot of things. Everything from ideas like defunding the police that NDBLM has been pushing to a whole host of policy reforms and actions that the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus is pushing for. They called on the governor to do some things in the short term a few months ago. Not a few months ago, a couple months ago, not too long after the protests and all of the outcry after the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and things like that. They called for the governor to do a few things like right away and talked to him about it, but we never saw any action. One example of that would be a ban on chokeholds. They felt like that was something the governor could do right away through executive order. They also wanted to see independent civilian review boards established to oversee public complaints of police violence. Well, that was more about what local leaders could do than necessarily the governor. But we saw a couple things that they asked the governor to do, which we haven't seen any action on up till now. That might be about to change. And then a much broader reform plan issued relatively recently.
And this the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, I mean, they announced the justice reform agenda last week. What does that focus on?
Yeah. They promised they were, when they first had their press conference about, here's what we want the governor to do now, that was just a couple of quick action items. They promised, though, at the time that they were going to work on their justice reform agenda. So I suppose in that sense, if you ask why is it taking this long for the governor to come up with something, well, it took the Black Caucus 2 months for them to come up with a justice reform policy agenda that includes, by my count, more than 40 different action items. So this is not like one or two things. This is a really comprehensive agenda that includes, that they broke it down into five sort of pillars: saving lives, holding accountable, empowering communities, changing culture, and improving transparency. So you have everything from banning no-knock warrants, racial profiling, chokehold, and neck restraints, to decriminalizing some crimes, including marijuana and other nonviolent events. Talking about rethinking how we police in the state of Indiana to, instead of sending necessarily police officers out for a nonviolent event, sending a strike team that has training in mental health resources and that sort of thing. Everything from, so things like that, to establishing a statewide youth justice advisory group to get young people, particularly young people of color, more involved and more in a much better place with the law enforcement system than it certainly is right now. Enhancing penalties for shootings involving officers, establishing automatic external investigations anytime law enforcement shoots an unarmed or retreating civilian. And then you go down to things like changing culture, where they're talking about better training of police officers, particularly when it comes to implicit bias, dispute resolution, de-escalation methods. And then when we talk about that transparency portion, making public police union contracts and requiring public hearings for their renewal, monitoring law enforcement officers with a history of complaints or violations. So that would be the idea of, and I want to emphasize that the Black Caucus talked to a lot of different groups when coming up with this reform agenda, including law enforcement organizations. And one thing that they heard from local law enforcement leaders was, I don't want to hire an officer with a history of violations, but it's not always easy for me to find that. And so it might happen almost by accident. And so what they want to do is, again, on that transparency side, make that a lot more easy to find out, so that we know that, so that an officer with a history of bad behavior can't easily get a job with a law enforcement agency a couple towns over.
How much influence does the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus seem to have right now with respect to the Holcomb administration?
Well, they were asked when they talked about, when they released this justice reform agenda, that they were asked about, I think by my colleague Lindsay Erdody of the IBJ, how much they had spoken with the governor about this. And they applauded the governor for listening to them and for being polite. But they were frustrated because they hadn't seen any action whatsoever from him, and that's what they were looking for. Now we're going to potentially get that action. We'll see, again, what the governor's announcement entails. And again, I think the thing to really be listening for is how much of this is – it's actually three different things. How much of this is – what the state is already doing and just telling you about it, how much of it is new proposals, and I would sort of divide those into two things. Is it new proposals that Holcomb is going to start doing right now with his administration? Is it things that he can start making happen immediately? Or is it, well, in the next legislative session, we will push for et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the Black Caucus's agenda is legislative proposals. So they are almost entirely things that they will have legislation for in the 2021 session. But they are lawmakers. So if the governor's agenda is almost entirely related to, well, I hope we do this in the future, I don't think that's going to please a lot of people. I'm not saying that's what it is. I just think that's going to be the important thing to look to listen for. What exactly is he proposing? Is it a wish list, or is it actual, this is what I'm doing right now?
What is the governor's reputation like with groups that focus on these issues of race and equity? How has he handled them during his term so far?
Well, we haven't seen a lot of we certainly haven't seen this sort of attention to issues of equity and inclusion in a broader public sphere the way we have this summer. For obvious reasons, the death of George Floyd in particular, inciting a sort of national discussion about this. Beyond that, we haven't seen him handle a lot of those issues. But I will say this, two things that he gets criticized, or something that he gets criticized for, is that he doesn't seem to have a lot of sway with fellow Republicans in the legislature. And two things that people point to are, one, he tried to get pregnancy accommodations for working mothers into legislation in a past session, where this is things that employers would have to accommodate, things like, you know, longer breaks in some cases for a pregnant woman, or adjustments to the schedule whenever possible, things like that. Well, that was killed by Senate Republicans despite the governor pushing for it. And that's something that wouldn't only help women of color, but it would certainly help women of color. Another thing that particularly members of the Black Caucus pushed a couple of years ago in the budget was funding for Medicaid funding for doulas, for pregnancy assistance or assistance in the birthing process. And that would particularly be helpful for communities of color. That funding was basically stripped out of the budget. They were asked the governor to put it back in. There was some back and forth on that, but it was never totally fully funded the way that folks wanted it to be. And so I think while he hasn't had to confront issues like this quite so starkly before, I think there is general frustration with Republicans in general in Indiana at the state level with not meeting, I don't even want to say the demands, but not meeting the expectations or the requests or the proposals of communities of color. And I look to when Governor Holcomb said, oh, I'm preparing a to-do list, I pointed out in a question to him that the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus comes up with a legislative agenda every single year, and I've been covering it for nearly a decade. And that entire time, Republicans have controlled the legislature, and the agenda is largely ignored. Not entirely, but largely ignored. And Governor Holcomb is a part of that.
Brandon Smith is our State House reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Brandon, thanks.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear from the vice chair of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus about what we might expect from the governor's remarks, which, again, are scheduled for 1:30, and we'll be bringing that to you live. I'm Matt Pelser, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about Governor Eric Holcomb's state address on equity and inclusion, which is scheduled to start in about 9 minutes. We'll bring you live audio of that speech. But before it starts, we want to talk to someone about what they're hoping to hear. We're joined now by State Representative Earl Harris Jr., who is vice chair for the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. Representative Harris, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus unveiled an expansive justice reform plan just last week. Can you tell us about some of the biggest goals?
Yeah, so a little bit of background. We took we had a lot of interviews, meetings, conversations. We even had some virtual town halls because we wanted to get input not just from us members of IBLC, but from the community and different organizations. We even had meetings with law enforcement, the prosecutors, the sheriffs, the Indiana State Police, in terms of the agenda and getting input. So I'll give you a couple of examples that I know we had a lot of support on. In fact, they actually brought this to us, law enforcement people, the monitoring histories of police officers, because one of the concerns they have is that they don't know if an officer is no longer within their previous agency because of issues. And they're worrying about hiring them and then taking on those issues or passing on issues to other agencies. And then the body and dash cam was a big one also that actually the law enforcement agencies mentioned to us that they would like to see, because they see that as not only protecting the public, but also protecting their officers from different accusations that may come out of there, where they can show the video and prove that whatever the accusation was did not happen.
And I mean, checking in with law enforcement is part of the balance, right? Because mm-hmm. this is where the discussion really, a lot of the discussion anyway, really is it with respect to law enforcement. Do you feel like those discussions with them really got somewhere substantive?
Yeah, I mean, part of when I say we met with them, I should have also added this. It wasn't just us requesting meetings. It was the law enforcement agencies reaching out to us, say, hey, we want to meet with you. We know that this reform is going on, justice reform. We would like to provide you with our thoughts and suggestions. And as the two I just mentioned, those were two that were on their list that completely matched with things that were on our list. There's others, but I just wanted to highlight those two because those two are pretty relevant and high level.
Sure. What kind of an impact did the nationwide protests this summer have on this agenda?
You know, the unfortunate thing that happened with Mr. Floyd and the different peaceful protests and things that have happened, I mean, it really has changed, and I hate to phrase it this way because I don't want to make it sound like I'm minimizing it, but it changed the game. I mean, it's a case of where this conversation is happening. I can tell you I've had conversations with another representative that's white, that's a Democrat, who she said to me she didn't know that there were a lot of these issues even taking place. The chair, Robin Shackelford, and I met with Speaker Houston. That was also one of our meetings. And as he's on the campaign trail, you know, we obviously have an election coming up in November, he said as he's been talking to people in his community, he's had people say, hey, you have to do something about this. We have to change the way things are. So it really has. This is a different year, a different situation, and we're looking at having the ability to make more change and make life better, really, for everyone.
Had the George Floyd incident not happened, do you think we would have an address like this? Maybe not today, but at some point. I mean, was the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus pushing for a lot of these reforms before, or did this really give you a mouthpiece for it?
Some of these things have been on and are on our agenda. The incident with Mr. Floyd and his death and how that happened really kickstarted it, not only for us, but obviously across the nation and really the world. So it's unfortunate that, you know, he died the way he died, but his death has been the catalyst for a lot of change here in Indiana as well as other places.
Do you think that the protests that we've seen in Indiana and elsewhere are going to have a real impact on lawmakers and the Holcomb administration? I mean, actually enacting the changes that you're looking for?
Well, you know, we'll see. I mean, we're coming up closer to the end of 20 and we'll go into the 2021 session. We've had other conversations. Representative Shackford and I also met with Representative Sturwald, who's over criminal code. And that was actually on the recommendation of Speaker Houston, because he's been put in charge of a committee, which is bipartisan, so Democrats, Republicans, and House and Senate members, including some IBLC members. And so there's a lot of work going on to push this. I mean, we obviously will go, if the rubber meets the road in the 2021 session, if we're taking people at their word, we will have changes happening.
Have you and the Black Legislative Caucus worked with the governor on his to-do list that he said he's working on to address racial injustice here in Indiana?
I can't say we've worked directly with him. We've had a couple of meetings with him where we've shared our agenda, we've shared information. We had a press conference last week where we put out the policy agenda and provided his office with a copy. So we knew that he was working on it. I think everyone knew that. That he's working on something, but in terms of the specifics, no. I did receive a phone call within the last 2 hours from a member of his staff that gave me a little bit of information about what he's going to talk about, which I think pretty much everyone knows at this point. But no, I can't say that we had any direct work with him, but the hope is that what he will talk about, we've had some influence on.
Governor Holcomb is striking a lot of he's performing quite a balancing act lately in terms of the wants and needs of his own party versus the other parties. He's listening a lot, it seems like. Have you sort of, I don't know, felt the same way?
Yeah, you know, I understand he's in an interesting position because he has gotten some pushback on some things with his own party. And it is, you know, it's a balancing act to some degree if you're the governor. The reality is this is a Republican-dominated state. When you look at the number of Republican representatives, Republican senator, the governor, but being in the party that's in control is not always the easiest position. So, I hope he does what's right. I hope his party doesn't fight him too bad on the things that are right and that he's willing to work with Democrats as well.
Okay. What would you – they're about to get started here in just a little bit. What would you like to hear from the governor in his address today?
Well, we want to, see some real action. I mean, words are words. Anybody can say this, say that. But, what's the action that's going to come out of it? What are the things he's going to do? What are the things he's going to be involved in? And I will tell you, one of the things that we requested with meeting with him is more involvement with IBLC. You know, we've reached out a hand, offered to help, offered to support, offered to help him get things in place. So I hope he does that. I know that one of the things that's going to be discussed is a new cabinet position. And I asked in the conversation I had earlier about the process, which was not completely known by the person I talked to. My hope is when it comes to hiring this person, that IBLC will have some sort of input into that process.
How would you rate the Holcomb administration so far, I guess, in respect to how they've addressed these kinds of issues during his term?
Overall, good. I mean, we provided a while ago some immediate action items that we hoped he could take, like no-knock warrants, chokehold, et cetera. We at this point haven't seen those things come into place. Now, those are things that he could do without the legislature being in. So we were a little disappointed that those things didn't happen. So I would have liked to have seen, we as a group would have liked to have seen those things. And again, maybe today is the day we hear those. We'll find out, obviously, all together. So we like the fact that he's talking about some things.
And Representative Harris, the governor is just about to speak. We'll check in with you afterward. Thank you so much.
And its immense impact on our health and our economy. That's true for all of us as individuals, and it's certainly true for our state and local governments. And it continues to be the new normal that we manage our way through every day. Even as we follow the science and work relentlessly to stamp it out, this is clearly one of the most dangerous viruses in our lifetimes. I know this is hard. I know there is fatigue. I know people just want it to go away. I do too. It's required tremendous sacrifice. We've endured unimaginable loss. And I appreciate everyone's patience, resilience, and generosity through it all. Truly like never before, we're in this together. And that's why ultimately we will prevail together. That said, we're also facing another kind of virus that's equally voracious. And it's in turn forcing us to a reckoning as a state and nation, one that's built on equality for all. I'm talking about cases of racism, sometimes obvious, sometimes subtle, that have led to inequity and exclusion that have plagued our country throughout our storied history. We now stand at an inflection point. We have an opportunity to acknowledge those past wrongs, learn from our history, and admit where we've come up short of our ideals. Then we must get about doing what we've done whenever we face a challenge, make historic progress together. It falls upon us, all of us, no matter how difficult the issue, how far away it may seem or easy to ignore. We, the people, together, marching toward the right, will determine our timely progress. Our country is unique in that we were founded on the promise that all men were created equal. As our founders wrote, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And yet it's just a fact. The concept wasn't put into practice even before the ink was dry. Quite the contrary. Laws were established that classified African Americans as property and prevented women from voting. There's nothing equal about that. That's why some 100 years later, our nation fought a civil war, American against American, to determine if one state could decide whether it was legal to own another person. More than 24,000 Hoosiers died. Nearly 50,000 were wounded in the fight to prevent slavery from spreading like a virus into states and to preserve a united states. Thankfully, the Union perspective, our side, our state, our founding written principles prevailed. But that hardly leveled the playing field, even here, for years to come. Over the ensuing decades, anti-slavery states like Indiana still attracted those who thought their birthright gave them the right to carry out heinous acts of violence against those who didn't look or pray the way they did. Lynching and burning down houses of worship were their means of sending messages of how it would be. Jim Crow laws kept people of color separate, prevented them from voting, and denied them equal treatment under the law. Think about it. It took 100 years after the Civil War to finally pass laws that outlawed discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin, and prohibited racial segregation in schools, employment, and public accommodations. Now, for sure, there has been undeniable progress. We've seen people of color move into positions long denied them in business, including America's first female self-made millionaire, Indiana's own Madam C.J. Walker, and in education, and in sports, and in the arts, and in government, including the election and re-election of a black president. And yet today, in 2020, it's clear. We must aspire to do more to form that more perfect union. The coronavirus has underscored stubborn racial disparities that are still with us, fueled by decades of unequal opportunity and structural barriers like job discrimination and access to good educations and health care. People of color are dying of COVID-19 at twice the rate of whites and are more likely to have lost their job during this pandemic. And it's in this environment that we've seen a number of unarmed black men and women killed, culminating in an officer kneeling on the neck of Mr. George Floyd for 8 minutes and 46 seconds until his last breath was snuffed out. I admit I can't put myself in a black person's shoes. I can't fully appreciate the everyday indignities and slights our friends and associates have had to deal with, let alone the fear of some things I've never had to think about for a second. So I've spent considerable time since Mr. Floyd's death connecting with and listening to black leaders and stakeholders. One conversation leading to the next and to the next and to the next. I've talked with and listened to mom and pop business owners, college presidents, law enforcement, corporate executives, church leaders, and everyday citizens, rural, urban, and suburban. Many have shared what's on their hearts and minds, and I've tried to do the exact same. One theme I heard over and over again was the importance of getting to root causes of inequities and not just reacting to the symptoms. Several people conveyed the sense that over our country's long history, inequity and exclusion have actually been ingrained in many of our institutions, systems, and structures, often unknowingly. And while we have made progress, and we have, We haven't rooted it out fast enough. Gaps persist, and some are widening. Another thing I heard is to think about the big picture. Dr. Sean Huddleston, the president of Martin University, Indiana's only predominantly black institution, something we should all be proud of, said to me that while black lives matter, black livelihoods matter too. I agree on both accounts. Black lives matter, and so do black livelihoods. Dr. Huddleston said we must remove barriers to success so all can benefit and achieve their dreams without having to worry about how much privilege society has afforded them. Powerful. Another theme I heard is best captured by what Martin Luther King called, quote, the fierce urgency of now. That we need to use this moment as an opportunity to forge a new, more inclusive future. We cannot lose this opportunity to act constructively. Dennis Bland, the president of the Center for Leadership Development, told me change is going to happen. The key is to shape change. That's what I and my team intend to do. Shape change. 2 months ago, I began work to make sure our own house was in order and to address disparities and inequities in your state government. I called my entire cabinet together and shared my commitment to acknowledge past shortcomings and do something about it, no matter how hard or raw or uncomfortable it might be. We formed an executive branch task force and charged them with identifying gaps in state government and providing recommendations to address them. And so for my first action, I'm creating a new position, Indiana's first ever Chief Equity, Inclusion, and Opportunity Officer. This person will be a member of the governor's cabinet, reporting directly to me, and will immediately focus solely on improving equity, inclusion, and opportunity across all state government operations, as well as drive systemic change to remove hurdles in the government workplace and the services we provide. And second, help them deliver their own strategic plans to tactically remove all such barriers. In short, this cabinet member will help every state agency raise their game. I'm confident this is the right first step because it's similar to how we're tackling other fronts like infant mortality. Infant mortality in Indiana, our rate, which disproportionately affects many black mothers and children, was unacceptable. So we set a goal to become the best state in the Midwest for infant mortality by 2024. We appointed an expert to lead the effort, in this case, Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box. We put in place the OB Navigator to help expecting mothers get the care they need and ensure that high-risk babies are delivered at hospitals with the right facilities. As a result, Indiana's infant mortality rate is at its lowest since 2012. But there's more to be done. To truly empower marginalized Hoosiers, we must aggressively close education and workforce training gaps. I believe that the surest path to equal opportunity in life is with a high-quality education. Unfortunately, our gaps in educational achievement and attainment reveal a more rocky path to success for black students compared to their other peers. Black students have lower high school graduation rates, lower college enrollment, and as a result, attain fewer college credentials than their counterparts from other groups, even while Indiana ranks in the top three nationwide for scholarship and tuition assistance, including help for minorities. Indiana's new Secretary of Education come January must make it a priority to improve minority teacher recruitment and learning gaps to bridge the divide between the haves and the have-nots. I was reminded by a conversation with IPS Superintendent Alicia Johnson of the value of education, of knowing that value, and for skills training for all students, including after high school in today's society and new-collar economy. No task will go farther toward promoting equal economic opportunity throughout Indiana than a good education. That's why I've made developing our workforce a top priority. It's a passion. And that's why the state of Indiana will pay 100% to skill up Hoosiers to fill the current 118,000 job openings we have right now in our state. Our Next Level Jobs program, which helps Hoosiers get training and helps employers train them, has been by most measures an overwhelming success. Just ask all those lives who have already been changed for the better because of this program. That's why we just added another $50 million from the CARES Act to these high-wage, high-demand programs. However, we must recruit more minorities into these fields and assist more minority-owned businesses to take advantage of our state programs. It's there, waiting to be used. I've asked Indiana's Commissioner of Higher Education, Teresa Lubbers, to work with DWD Director Fred Payne and our workforce cabinet to submit specific recommendations on how we might adjust policies for all our workforce programs in order to create greater opportunity for people of color. Truly leveling the playing field will require all of us from every corner of society. That's why I'm appealing to our private sector to continue to play the outsized role they play in our state. Indiana is blessed with so many great companies and philanthropies with strong ties to our communities and commitments already to diversity and inclusion. We've seen generous commitments to strengthening equity and inclusion in our state from companies like Anthem and Lilly and IKEA, Duke, CenterPoint Energy, the IMS, the Colts and Pacers, Fever, foundations like Lumina, the Lilly Endowment and Cummins Foundation, and many, many more all over our state. We're counting on all of you for continuing your bold and creative leadership and partnership to make life better for all Hoosiers. We're asking others to step up and join in this noble cause. Now let me turn to policing. I know that mayors and police chiefs around the state are taking a hard look at their use of force policies. We're doing the same here. The first priority for them, as well as for me, is the protection of our citizens and our officers. When you call 911, you expect a response, and we need to make sure our officers are trained and equipped appropriately to do so. That's on us. For that reason, I will mandate the use of body cameras for every frontline state trooper by spring of 2021. Indianapolis, Jeffersonville, and Bartholomew County, I just read Anderson today, and many others, are just some of the local jurisdictions that have recently approved use of body cameras for their officers. We are also taking a hard look at police training. The Indiana Law Enforcement Academy, or ILEA, provides the basic training for the majority of all law enforcement officers in the state, including our Indiana State Police, best in the nation, by the way. Last year alone, over 2,600 state law enforcement officers received some form of training at the academy. I will direct a third-party, top-down review of our state police and law enforcement academy curriculum and training. This can confirm good practices, but it can also help us modernize how we train our officers. We'll look at areas like use of force, de-escalation training, and implicit bias training. And I'm committed to working with our legislature to add more civilian representation to the ILEA board itself. We also know that community policing is stronger when officers reflect the makeup of their community. While African Americans make up 9.8% of our state's population, they comprise just 5.8% of our state police officers. So we have more work to do. That said, I'm proud of the progress we've made with our state police graduating classes. We've doubled the minority representation among graduates between 2016 and 2019, from about 14% to 28%. So I know this can be done. I know the momentum can continue. And I'll continue working with the members of the legislature, judiciary, and with local sheriffs and prosecutors on ideas that can be brought forward next session through our annual legislative process to collaborate on sentencing reform, jail overcrowding, and exorbitant fees, to name just a few. Now, how's this all come together? To better monitor our overall progress, I'm directing the state of Indiana's Management Performance Hub to create a public disparity data portal to show just that, how our state programs are working. We'll track and share up-to-date information on various fronts, each important to transforming someone's station in life at every stage, like pre-K enrollment, graduation, college enrollment, and employment rates, access to capital, Healthy Indiana plan enrollment, and other health indicators like substance abuse resources and smoking, diabetes, and hypertension rates, foster care placement rates, incarceration and recidivism rates, just to name a few areas where we need to see continued improvement. We'll put our cards on the table, face up. This type of public dashboard transparency is critical if we're all going to move forward together toward equity and greater opportunity. You'll hear me talking more about what we're doing, what progress we're making, and what gaps remain as we measure and publish the results. Fellow Hoosiers, Martin Luther King said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." I believe that. When we see injustice, we must deal with it, whether it be against a people or a person. Like when it came to pardoning an innocent man, Mr. Keith Cooper, finally now a free man. What I've laid out today are steps in a broad effort to make sure Indiana is a place where every Hoosier has an equal opportunity and access to achieve our founders' vision of life, liberty, and that pursuit of happiness. Achieving, realizing that vision requires we address root causes, inequities, and remove barriers that have been built up for centuries. It won't be easy. It won't happen overnight. But oftentimes, the best view comes after the hardest climb. Our climb, yours and mine, requires change. Not just in policy, but also in our hearts and minds. In my conversation again with Dr. Huddleston, he said, "No change happens without discomfort." I expect some discomfort in the months and years ahead. But I'm telling you, it is oh so worth it. I ask all Hoosiers to join me in a spirit of openness and thoughtfulness and progress. That may mean questioning long-held assumptions. It has for me. And it fueled a hunger to do more about it. So, to those who feel impatient and that we're not moving fast enough on this journey, I get it. Protesting is a cherished right that Americans have fought and died for. To those who subscribe to the late John Lewis's getting into some good trouble nonviolently, I get it. But John Lewis also knew the key to driving change was nonviolence. So I say, if you want change, don't throw a brick. Use a brick to lay a foundation for something better. 1 Thessalonians 5:15 reminds us to, quote, make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for each other and for everyone else. So I say, if you want change, don't throw that brick. Use it to build a foundation for something better. Every community deserves to be a peaceful place to play, go to school, work, shop, and raise a family. I feel for the shop owners, many of them people of color whose stores were damaged by looters. We must never forget those who paid the full measure to keep us safe. As we still mourn Officer Breanne Leith, Trooper Bo Steven, and Deputy Jacob Pickett, all killed in the line of duty while protecting others of all colors. Those three left home every day in uniform, like so many others, not knowing if they would ever return, serving in neighborhoods they only sought to keep safe and secure. Fortunately, few of us are called upon to make that kind of sacrifice. But we all have a role to play. For my part, I commit to you that I will work to be a barrier buster and to bring greater equity and opportunity within your state government and the services you entrust us to provide so that every Hoosier can take full advantage of their gifts and of their potential. And together we'll make E Pluribus Unum out of many one, not just a slogan in Indiana, but our North Star. Thank you, and may God continue to bless our efforts and our great state.
And that was Governor Eric Holcomb with a live address to the state on a new effort toward equality and inclusion. We are still on the line with Representative Earl Harris, Jr., Vice Chair for the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. Representative Harris, let's start generally. What do you think of today's remarks?
Well, you know, I was making notes here, and I actually received a text from another IBLC member, Representative Summers, that a lot of what the governor talked about fits a lot of the agenda that IBLC has put out. So it's good to hear that we're in unison. We just need to make sure that when it comes down to choices he makes and what happens in the next session, that those things actually occur. And if I can add on real quick, two things I forgot to mention that he did under our change culture. When we met with the law enforcement agencies, they talked about training and the need to update it because it is out of date. And then they also talked about the mental health component. So I was glad to hear the governor mention those as well.
Yeah, Governor Holcomb, as part of his remarks, says he'll create Indiana's first ever Chief Equity, Inclusion, and Opportunity Officer. The officer will focus on improving equity, inclusion, and opportunity across all state government operations, as well as drive systemic change to remove hurdles in the government workplace and services the state provides. Additionally, the officer will help state agencies develop their own strategic plans to remove barriers, and the officer will be a member of the governor's cabinet and report directly to the governor. Looks like we will be coming close on time. But what do you think of this new position, the Chief Equity, Inclusion and Opportunity Officer?
I think the idea of the position is great, but I'm going to reference something I think I said in the first part of our interview, is we would like to have, we IBLC would hope that the governor will allow us to have some input. We want to make sure, you know, you can create a position, but if the right person and the right staff is not in that position, it's really not going to be effective. And so as the policy, you know, people that are black and brown skin, we'd really like some input into that.
All right. State Representative Earl Harris Jr. is vice chair for the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. I wish we had more time with you today, but we appreciate what we've got. Thank you, Representative Harris.
Oh, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow is the second installment in our ongoing series on Indiana Authors, the Indiana Authors Awards, presented by Eugene and Marilyn Glick. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In.